Hey bosses, before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week, Daffy. Now, if you're like me, it's the time of the year where you're dealing with the headache of collecting all your tax forms, W-2s, 1099s, any other seemingly endless pieces of paper, and it's frustrating when you can't find them. I just went through this last weekend. I spent a whole entire day trying to organize all my tax forms, and when it comes to charitable donations, those donation receipts can get lost very easily. That's where Daffy comes in. Daffy is a modern platform and app for charitable giving. It allows you to give to any 501c3 across the United States with just a few taps. In fact, we even talked to their CEO, friend of the show, Adam Nash, a few episodes back. If you want to go take a listen to that, it's episode 263. Now, I'm going to tell you all about the amazing benefits of Daffy to make charitable giving easy and stress-free to help you optimize your taxes during the break in the show. But if you want to give them a look right now, we got a limited time offer that'll get you a free $25 to give to the charity of your choice when you sign up. Just visit daffy.org/boss. That's Daffy, daffy.org/boss, B-O-S-S. Daffy.org/boss. I'll tell you even more coming up in a few moments, but for now, let's get this episode started of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
All right. Hey, bosses, and welcome to the quarterly update Q1 2023. I am in Thailand, actually sitting 2 feet away from Sam, even though we're doing this on Zoom.
Another really professional setup that we've got ourselves here.
How funny is it? We were trying to figure out how to record this with a video and two mics. And we realized, well, actually, Sam had the best. I was trying to do it through Audacity and setting up a third camera. And Sam was like, why don't we just do it through Zoom?
Yeah, we've done this probably 20 times, but we keep forgetting how we set it up. It's always a different way. And this time we're just like, the easiest way is just through Zoom. I was actually going to walk back to my apartment and do it remotely, but we're like, oh, we can just do Zoom sitting across from each other. Great.
Yeah. So it's nice to be in the same room. I can almost, I think if we reached our hands out together, we can almost touch each other.
Don't touch me.
Okay. But yeah, it's nice to be in the same room, to be hanging out together. A lot has happened in the last quarter. I actually wasn't going to come to Thailand at all. It's kind of a surprise, but I agreed to meet some friends in the Maldives for a dive trip. Just did that amazing 7 days of diving. And then I decided to meet up with my buddy Chris, one of my really good friends who lives in Bangkok, for another 7 days. And he convinced me to come to Thailand. And Sam happens to be here. So he came out to my neck of Thailand. What do you think of it?
I like it so far. So we're down in Jamtien Beach, which is about 30 minutes south of Pattaya. I've been to Pattaya once in the past, and I thought I'd probably never come again. But this area it's really like quite chill. I mean, my building where I'm staying it reminds me of Chiang Mai. It's like, it's quiet. When you wake up in the morning, you hear the birds and animals and stuff. There's a beach right next to us, which I still haven't been to yet. But there's nothing I would say like remarkable about this area. It's just really easy. Like super easy. If you just want to come and not think too much, not be overloaded with things you need to do. So far, so good. It's only been a couple of days. I mean,
yeah. And to be fair, I mean, we've walked, along the beach, not on the sand, but you still got the benefits of being by the ocean, the cleaner air,
yeah,
kind of the calmness, the relaxed people, kind of like a much more chill vibe than Bangkok and definitely Phuket.
This is the great mystery, is like always trying to find a place in Thailand that's like livable for long enough. And I pretty much ruled out Bangkok. It's like 7 days there and you're done. It's probably one of the best places in the world to go for like 2 days, stay at a nice hotel, have great dinner. But after that, man, like the pollution, the traffic, the heat, just they get to you. So I pretty much think Bangkok's unlivable unless you really like have to do it, which no one does that we know. Phuket, I was down in, and it's just, I would say the ratio of foreigners to Thais is like 1-to-1, overloaded with tourists right now, especially like Russian. And it's kind of tough to get into a good routine in Phuket. There's not like an abundance of cafes and good places to spend the day. But a good thing with here is like you're close to Bangkok, so you can get there easily. It's really cheap. Like the apartment Johnny that we're in right now is $300 a month, which is insane. Place I'm staying is a little more, but it's $600 a month, which is, you know, very good value on a global level. So yeah, see how it goes. Ask me in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, right now, I mean, I've been here for a couple of weeks now and I like it a lot. It's just way too hot. I used to not mind the heat. I used to kind of really like it. But after spending 2 years in Ukraine, I miss the cold. I miss not sweating. Let's say
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You know, and I realize I can always put on more clothes. I can always be prepared to be in the cold, but like in the heat, I mean, what I did is I went into Decathlon and about all quick dry sports clothes. And even then it's like, I'm less, I guess I dry quicker, but I'm still sweaty all the time.
There's literally only one thing to do between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. And that's like sit in a cold cafe. You can't go to the beach. You can't be outside. It's too hot to train Muay Thai. And I think that's the trick with Thailand is like, you have to be in a place that has access to cool cafes.
Yeah. And luckily, right where we're living, we're like exactly where we're living in Jomtien happens to have three really good cafes mm-hmm. within a block from where I live. So I could happily live here. And I can see this actually becoming a digital nomad hotspot because the costs of living are low. It's really easy to get in and out of because Pattaya has an airport, but also Bangkok has cheap flights and international flights everywhere. And as Sam said, it's only a 2-hour taxi away. I mean, literally for $40, you can just take a taxi straight from the airport, which isn't too bad. Or, there's a cheap bus as well. Amazing food is here. And even though I would never want to live in central Pattaya because it's just madness, it is super fun to go to, you know, let's say once a month or maybe once a week if you're single and you just want to party and drink and, you know, kind of Vegas style. But also that's where the shopping malls are. That's where the movie theaters are. There's a lot of kind of normal Bangkok style life there, you know?
Yeah. I had a call with a friend yesterday who's been living up north and he's been thinking about like what his next move is. He's like, you know, I just don't know if Thailand's a home or want to set up a family, like take the next stage in life here. And we were comparing, contrasting like the lifestyle in Europe. And man, I have to say like, it's great here, but when I compare this to the setup in Barcelona and the quality of life there is just like, it's more, it's better value here, but it's much higher there. If that makes sense. Like the air is good. The weather is incredible. All four seasons, you have access to parks and beaches and mountains and fine wine and all this stuff. So being here is great, but it makes me also appreciate Barcelona and it also makes me realize like that's definitely going to be a home base for me for a long time. You know, you feel the same about Ukraine given, you know, foregoing the current situation there.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for the Russian invasion, Ukraine would be my dream destination to be in. You know, I started to appreciate the four seasons. I started to appreciate the snow, which is something that I never thought I would growing up in California. But I don't know. I feel like as I'm getting older, I realize the endless summer isn't all that it's, said to be. And, you know, when the airport was open, it was really easy to fly to Turkey, to the beaches or anywhere in Europe. So that would have been my perfect spot. I know it's not for everyone. Not everyone wants to learn the language and it's a different culture. But for me, it was really kind of the perfect mix of, you know, discomfort, but ease of travel. Thailand, as Sam just said, is the perfect budget-friendly place. I just realized now that I'm pretty close. I'm like 9 years away to qualify for a retirement visa in Thailand because it starts at 50. And the only reason why I never spent more time here, I chose not to make my life here or buy property, was because there's no real easy way to have a long-term visa besides spending, you know, $30,000 on a Thai Elite visa, which I just never wanted to do. But when I turn 50, if I'm single and I don't have a family yet, I might just move here and say, you know what? Thailand's not a bad place to retire.
Yeah. We were also talking about this at lunch earlier today, like comparing Thailand and Bali. We just released an episode last week. You guys have checked that out by now, just talking about the property prices and what's happening with the waves of people coming, basically more so with Bali now, but Thailand as well. And we were talking about like the quality of life in Bali, because it's odd that in Bali, property prices have been going up in like almost an exponential way for the last 10 years, but in Thailand, they're flat. And we were making it up to be the fact that like Bali, the quality of life is better in Bali. Like the intellectual agenda is better in Bali. It seems to draw more of like a New York, San Francisco, London crowd, where Thailand still has that backpacker mentality. And for the reasons we just talked about, it's kind of hard to like get really settled here and feel like I could be here for a long, long time.
No, actually, you know what? I feel the opposite, where I know you have like the, you know, kind of the, I don't want to call them intelligent crowd, but like the rich, you know, tech crowd that goes to Bali. You know, maybe some of them go there for a few months, a year to chill out. But in general, I think the lifestyle here is much better kind of long term, because when you're in Bali, there's no like big movie, you know, movie theaters or malls that you can go to kind of just have like a very Western, you know, type life. You're almost always kind of outdoors. So when it's raining, like, and the weather's bad, like there's not really much to do, you know. The roads are terrible. It's hard to get around. It's everything's low rise, which is why the land prices go up, because there's just not that many places to build. While here, every apartment building is a brand new high rise condo, and there's so much land that they just keep building, and that's why the prices don't go up. That combined with the fact that, as we mentioned last episode, the homeowners' fees are so low, and often they're not used at all for maintenance of the buildings, that things just deteriorate, and then people just buy a new property. So why would the old ones go up?
That's true. But we can forget about both of these places, because I got a place that is way better than both. I know it's going to resonate with a lot of listeners, because it's one of those countries that everyone goes to and they're like, I just love that place. You know what I'm talking about, Johnny?
Japan.
Man, my friend.
I haven't been, but I can imagine it's a cool place.
It's great that you haven't been, because it's like one of those places you still have ahead of you, you know, that you're like, I know I can go there and it's going to be awesome. I've kind of lost that. Like the only places I haven't been is kind of like Central Africa at this point, which I don't think I'm going to go there and be like, got to be here. But Japan is unreal. Like the quality of life there is, you just like walk around and you kind of just want to pat every Japanese person on the back and be like, well done, man. Like you and all of your past ancestors and generations before you have done like such an incredible job at building this place. It's almost to the degree that I feel the whole world should pay like some type of tax to just turn Japan into like an international park and just preserve it. Just preserve it. Don't change it because the population's dying off. Don't open it up and to all types of crazy immigration and like lose the culture. Just keep it exactly how it is. It's such a special place. Kyoto in the fall or the spring, where I was just there for his cherry blossoms, it's like walking through heaven. You could actually imagine humans creating heaven on earth by going to Kyoto in fall or spring and just looking and observing. It's like, wow, it's inspiring for people to go there and see it and hopefully bring back some of that, those elements, and instill them like wherever they are locally.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, I would definitely want to visit Japan. I wouldn't live there unless I was willing to learn Japanese, which I know is a very difficult language. Yeah. I wish Japanese people would make more babies. I mean, if I was there, I wouldn't pat them on the back and say, good job. I would pat them on the back and say, get into the bedroom.
Yeah. No, I feel the same. Thais and Japanese, I'm like, how do we get them to encourage them to breed more? But you are right about Japan. The country, if you go as a tourist, I think you see, you access about 10% of the country, which is fine. You get all the highlights, but that gap of breaking in from like accessing 10% to accessing the full thing requires Japanese. Like you got to speak good Japanese. And that is, according to the CIA, that's the most difficult language in the world right now.
Well, I can definitely imagine that. Learning Russian was pretty hard for me as well. And then now learning Ukrainian, I realize it's so difficult for me, and that I'm starting from such a low level, just because I never even hear it very often. You know, like it's not like I watched a lot of Ukrainian movies or heard Ukrainian music before last year, that I realized that Ukrainians are learning English much faster than I can ever learn Ukrainian. So at this point, I'm happy just to learn some basic phrases to be polite and you know, but I honestly, I think I'm 100% sure that the future of Ukraine after this war is going to be a bilingual culture, but not as much Russian and Ukrainian, but actually English is going to be, I don't know, like a official business language, but something like that, where I think, and I've spoken to a lot of my Ukrainian friends as well. They said that they also think that business and things of that nature, like international relations, are all going to be done in English instead of Ukrainian or Russian.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think Ukraine will just get continuously closer and closer to Europe as well.
Yeah, especially after this. Yeah, 1 year. I'm pissed that Russia's still there. I want to go back. Actually, I have a plane ticket to go back on May 2nd.
Really? Yeah. That's so funny. Randomly, my flight back to Europe's May 2nd. Also,
oh, that's so crazy. Random. Yeah. Where were you flying to? What time?
I'm flying from Japan. It'll be my third time in Japan in 3 months. I'm flying Japan back to Barcelona. I'm gonna be there for May and June.
Okay, so we're gonna miss each other, but I'll be flying from Bangkok through India.
Whoa.
On one of these low cost carriers. Indian low cost carrier. And then I have like a 5-hour layover there. Actually, I'm excited for some good Indian food. So I remember the lounges there in India are pretty good. Like it was like an Indian buffet.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't been to India. I was supposed to do a night overstay there. And I got to the airport in India trying to get into Chennai. And I didn't know you needed a visa to go into India. So they kept me in like airport purgatory for 24 hours until I could catch my next flight. But fortunately, they didn't send me home.
And you couldn't use a lounge or anything?
No, it was shitty, man. It was like a room like this with just wood chairs along both sides. And I had to stay there for like what was like 18 hours or something.
That's literally just like being in jail for an hour a day.
Yeah, it was not fun. At all, but good learning experience.
Well,
I was just happy they didn't send me back, because I had a whole trip to Bhutan planned, and that's not like an easy trip. You have to get approved and visas and guides and everything. And if like they had sent me home, I would have had the whole thing would have been canceled.
Yeah, that would suck. Okay, so let's hope my 5 hours in India is not a big deal. I think it'll be okay. But then actually, I have to stop by. I'm flying into Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
But my flight.
Abu Dhabi. Yeah.
Yeah. But my next flight is actually out of Dubai the next day. So I get in Abu Dhabi at like midnight. I'm going to stay at an airport hotel. And then I'm going to do like a 2-hour bus to Dubai and then fly from there to Budapest.
Okay. How much did you save on your ticket to go through that ordeal? India, a night over in India, an hour long transfer from Abu Dhabi. There's a second plane, 3 plane check ins.
Yeah. But altogether, that flight was less than $300. From Thailand, which is really cheap. If I wanted to fly, actually, and there was no direct flights. Like if there was direct, I might have thought about paying it. But with one layover, kind of like an easier connection, then it would have been like $800 or $900. So I'm saving like $500 or $600.
Yeah.
So you know.
Well, so if you extrapolate that decision to take that flight, also, this is how I always feel about flying, paying for business class. Where it's like at the end of the day, you're saving it. You're talking about 8 hours of comfort,
mm-hmm.
But the price increase typically is like, let's say $2,000-$4,000, right? Just like when you sit there and think about it, it's like 8 hours. Okay, I'm gonna be moderately comfortable for 8 hours, or I can be more comfortable for 8 hours. But you're gonna spend $3,000 for that little bit of comfort. It's like it's so hard to justify.
Yeah, like I can only justify it if. One or two things, right? One is if I'm on a very limited time constraint, mm-hmm. where I need to arrive somewhere well rested. So let's say I'm going somewhere just for like 3 or 4 days and I need to be productive those 4 days, then it's worth, you know, paying the money to show up for the, you know, to be rested and focused for your meetings or whatever it is. I think that's the whole point of business class. Or, you know, let's say someone's really wealthy but they only have a 5-day vacation and then they want to enjoy the whole 5 days. They want to just show up, you know, just enjoy themselves. But for me, my time is not really worth anything right now. So I can go take my time to get there. I can spend a week resting. And if I can save $2,000, that's probably more than I would have made in a week of working anyways.
For sure. I have a new theory now of why business class is not even better than economy class.
Okay, tell me.
So I've thought about my times flying business class and my times flying economy class and just your mental state. And a lot of times it's better flying economy. And the reason is because when you fly business, you have your expectations of that $4,000 ticket are like way up here, right? But often reality is like you have a crying baby next to you in business and it just will annoy the living shit out of you for 8 hours, right? Because you don't expect that. And it's not fair that that's there, right? When you sit in economy, like on a long haul let's say a budget airline, you're like, dude, they're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at me, man. I'm going to have two crying babies next to me. Like someone kicked in my seat from behind. So your expectations are like, look, I just got to get through this. And then oftentimes it's a lot better, right? You have no one next to me. Yeah. You, they serve you like a lot of wine or something. Yeah. So
Sam, have you tried the, I don't call it a hack or trick, but just the courtesy of giving the stewardess a bag of like M&Ms or some kind of candy when you go on board as a thank you?
No, what I do is I, whenever I see them on the way in, I always acknowledge them and like thank them in advance. But I'm guessing it's sort of the same narrative, right?
Try it, but with a bag of candy.
Okay.
Because every time, okay, so every time I've done this, they've been first off super nice to me. Second, they try to find you an upgrade if it's available. And then third, they always offer you free alcohol or snacks or something like that.
Yeah.
The reason why they do it is actually, it turns out that if you work for an airline and you fly in someone else's airline, it's actually a courtesy to bring them a gift. Mm. Usually some snacks, some chocolates or something. So they just assume that you work for another airline.
Okay.
And they've asked me before, they're like, oh, which airline do you work for? And I was honest with that. So, you know, I don't, but I have friends who work at other, you know, other airlines, and yeah, and I saw them doing it. So
if you ever, that's a good one. And there's a benefit in doing so. If you ever, like when you're walking out of the flight and there's a line of people, of course, and the stewardesses are always there saying, you know, goodbye. You very rarely see anyone acknowledge them. They would just walk. They're in a rush to get off the plane. And no one acknowledges the pilots if the cockpit door is open. And it's like, damn, these pilots just like took us from point A to point B safely, landed. You know, no one's like, hey, man, thanks for the flight and like getting us here safe. I don't know. It just, everyone takes it for so much for granted, you know?
Well, in Ukraine, they've kind of stopped doing it. The younger generation stopped doing it. But when the flight lands, especially when it lands smoothly without any issues.
Oh, I hate that. That's too much.
I love it.
That's not a cultural thing. I think that just means that happens when people, you're on a flight when people haven't flown that much. It's always a weird like route that.
I love doing that. Yeah? I love doing it. I do it now just to take the piss.
Oh my gosh.
But then when I do it, other people join in because I think a lot of them secretly want to, but they don't want to be embarrassed if they're not doing it.
So do you know what the best way to compliment a pilot is?
Give them a salary boost. No, what is it?
It's to say nice landing, because the majority of everything besides the landing is autopilot and automated, but the landing is still very much, at least as of a few years ago, is still very much a skilled thing. And when you feel those wheels just so gracefully like touch down, that's a lot like that. That's their moment to shine. They're trying to get that thing just like you don't feel it. And when you feel like a really hard landing, it's like, all right, that was probably like the junior pilot that was landing, you know? But so if you walk by and the cockpit door is open, you had a good flight, you should always say good landing. Thank you.
They'll good like landing. And speaking of smooth transitions, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back and talk about the rest of our quarter.
This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Daffy. It's that time of the year that you've been dealing with the headache of collecting all your W-2s, 1099s, and any other document you need for your tax returns. I mentioned it at the top of the show. I just wasted an entire Saturday doing just this. Don't be like me. Get Daffy and you never have to dig through emails, desk drawers, or folders to find donation receipts again. That's why we're excited to be partnering with them for this episode so that you all can maximize your impact and your charitable tax deductions in 2023. Daffy is a modern platform and app for charitable giving, allowing you to give to any 501c3 across the United States with just a few taps. And because it houses all your charitable contributions, you only have one place to go at tax time, and you can easily optimize and automate your donations. Daffy does all that by helping you set up a donor advised fund, or commonly called a DAF. It's a tax advantaged account like a 401k or IRA, but for charitable giving. Donor advised funds like Daffy help you maximize one of the most generous tax deductions, charitable contributions. It allows you to contribute cash, stock, or crypto on a one-time or recurring basis. Take the tax deduction at the time of the contribution and then distribute that money to over 1.5 million charities, schools, and faith-based organizations whenever you want. So head on over to Daffy.com daffy.org/boss if you want to start giving and maximizing the tax benefits of giving today. And for a limited time, if you visit that link, daffy.org/boss, you can get a free $25 to give to the charity of your choice. Check it out now. It's Daffy, daffy.org/boss.
All right, guys, welcome back. And if there's been a little bit of echo in the first half, sorry about that, but Sam and I are in a tiny $300 a month studio apartment with a terrible Wi-Fi, probably the worst Wi-Fi in all of Thailand.
I'm surprised we're not getting heat about changing the name of our podcast from Invest Like a Boss
to Invest Like a Bum. Well, this is part of our
cheap asses.
Yeah, but this is actually, I mean, honestly, this is how we ended up, well, at least how I ended up saving up, enough to invest is by living cheaply in Thailand. So this actually brings it all full circle. I was living in a place that was less than $300 a month while living in Thailand, building my empire, not on the same MacBook Air, but actually the same one that Sam is using. He's probably the only one in this whole crew that is still using the non-M1 chip.
I don't even know what an M1 chip is, bro. My Mac Air works totally fine. I hate device upgrades, man. I like the old school stuff. I'd still be using an iPhone 4 if mine didn't break.
Bad.
But it's a fair point that once you live like enough, you've had a taste of luxury in your life, and you go back to like the basics, like the room that I'm renting here, man, it's like, I'm totally happy in that. I can't imagine if I was in a $1,000 a night, you know, penthouse, I don't think anything would be that much better, right? It's like, I have a very cozy room. It's comfortable. It's quiet. So you don't need to spend much money to have a great quality of life.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But the problem is once you have the luxuries, it's really hard to go back. I wish I never would have bought my nice apartment in Kyiv, not just because of the war, but because it made me so comfortable having a large, you know, three-room apartment, you know, where I have like a guest room and a separate living room, a separate kitchen, and, you know, big TV, nice big couch, you know, nice big comfortable beds, nice kind of designer furniture. Now it makes me really unhappy whenever I live in other places, which is why I ended up just saying, you know what, if I'm going to be unhappy anyways, I might as well save some money and just rent the cheapest thing I can find.
Might as well eat 40-cent food. I don't feel that way. I feel just as good living in my very simple one-bedroom apartment in Chiang Mai as I do in my million-dollar-plus place in Barcelona that's much, much bigger, much nicer, great building. I don't know. You know, sometimes it's simple stuff. And it's important to practice the basics, right? Like if you do come into a lot of money and your wealth is going up and you're inflating your lifestyle, always remember to like practice the basics. Take the bus sometimes, fly economy just to balance things out, stay in budget hotels, eat street food, do things like this so you don't spoil yourself.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, that ties back into what we were just talking about before the break and why I don't fly business class anymore. But when I was hustling hard and working hard and I was making 20 grand a month, and it was kind of a not a write-off, but because I think that's a little white lie that we like to tell ourselves when we run a business, because nothing's a true write-off. It's still cheaper just to not buy the thing in the first place than to try to expense it, right? Because that money is still coming out of the bottom line. But when I was, you know, making 20 grand a month, I didn't mind spending 4 grand flying from the US to Thailand, because it, you know, kind of saved my sanity and it made me feel good about, you know, working so hard. So that was like my one treat. But now that I'm not making that type of money, I'm not building businesses, like, it's just, there's no reason to do it.
Well, that makes two of us, Johnny. I'm officially out of working as of 3 weeks ago. So I'm back fully into living on my investment income. And as part of that, I did something last quarter that is it's a lifestyle, but also it's a money saving thing, but it's mostly lifestyle. And that is our most popular episode from last year with the gentleman from Mile Method. I joined Mile Method this year. So I'm like 3 months into that. And the whole basis was like, man, I got to start saving money, but I also want to, there's no way I'm buying business class flights now because I don't have the income necessarily to offset it. So hopefully this will be a way I get some good flights in the future.
Well, shout out to Trevor. You can guys take a listen to that episode. Yeah, I think if I lived in the US, I would 100% do it. The only reason I can't turn cards is I have my expenses are so low that I was going to apply for a business card that was going to give me something crazy, like I think it was like $3,000 or $6,000 back or something. I think it was more. I think it was like, yeah, it was a lot of money. It's like $6,000 or something. I thought all I have to do is spend $6,000 a month or for the next, I don't know, $6,000 over the next 3 months or something like that. Yeah, that's what it was. I got something like a couple thousand dollars for just spending $2,000 a month. And I realized I can't even do that.
Not on a credit card anyways. Yeah, yeah,
definitely not on a card. So I was like, unless I found some way to churn it.
Yeah.
Like there's just not in my cards right now. So I'm okay with just these cheap flights. And
that's the thing too. That's the thing too, is like the true value of what you're getting out of the service is the price of an economy flight. In my view, it's like, do you want to do that work and keep everything organized and do all this? Because I can fly from Bangkok to Japan for $200, or I can use like 60,000 points to fly business, which is like all the effort that's required in getting approved, communicating with the bank, paying, you know, spending, which in some cases you mentioned 6,000 over 3 months. I just got denied for a credit card, business credit card, which I would have had to spend 15,000 in 3 months. So that's 5,000 a month. And that's, you got to kind of figure things out to get that done, right? Because a lot of the big expenses you can't pay with credit cards. So it's not like there's work involved and thought to be involved. I'll have more to report in a couple months once I actually get further into the program though.
Absolutely. Well, this will be a good segue into jumping into some more personal finance things. Yeah. Sam and I have both changed a lot with our income, but also what we're investing in. We're moving our money. And right now in 2023, it's kind of very volatile times. The stock market's all over the place. We had a couple bank failures recently, and Sam and I are both moving our money around. So stay tuned. If you guys are a Patreon, the full episode is going to be both in video format as well as a downloadable MP3. For those listening to the free version on Spotify, thank you for listening. If you want to check out the whole episode and also just support us as a podcast, you can join for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/investlikeaboss or investlikeaboss.com and click on Patreon. Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.